Hello and welcome. You are listening to the Civitas On Air podcast, where we bring to you informed debate and discussion.
Hello, welcome. This is a podcast that would focus on our talk about MS and whatever subject that is connected with society. We have our guest here, Jean-Yves Georges, who is a project coordinator and project originator of the project that we are going to talk about. And just to start the conversation and just to go further, I would like to ask you, what were the origins of the MSR project? Can you tell us more about this?
Bonjour, good day. So this project is a three-year project that took birth about 3 years ago during the COVID time, when we had some time to think about what we've been doing for 10 years before and what we want to do next. And for the last 12 years now, I've been working in association with biologists on the evaluation of wetland restoration in favor of the reintroduction of a small pond turtle, which is a European pond turtle, whose Latin name is Emis orbicularis. And using the name of the species, we applied to get a grant for this longer project, aiming on one side to have a better assessment of how good reintroduction project work for these species throughout Europe, but also how people can engage more deeply or with more conviction in nature conservation, nature protection.
Mm-hmm. And why is MS so suitable for this purpose?
So the European pond turtle, as probably all turtles, have a very positive perception by people. So any people you meet in the street, you ask them, what do you think about turtle? Well, people will say, well, I love turtles. That's one side. But our European pond turtle lives in wetlands, and wetlands are natural habitats that are key habitat for in terms of ecology. It provides water, it provides resources, but it's also clearing water. But wetlands are full of mosquitoes, full of disease, and basically when you go in the street and ask people, what do you think about wetlands? People will say, no, that's too risky, that's dirty, I don't want to get sick. And then we went to the challenge, which is, can we actually use the public positive perception of the turtle to convince them that wetlands are worth being conserved and protected? And that's why we call this project Emis Air, because the idea is to use the European pond turtle, Emis, as an emissary of environmental conservation and people engagement in nature protection.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us more a bit about the problem that is very much connected with these issues raised by the project, meaning biodiversity? Can you tell us a bit more what is biodiversity and why is it important? Why is it important for people? Why should it be important for people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the Emisaire project has three major components. The first one is wetlands as habitat. The second one is biodiversity, as you mentioned. So the European pond turtle is just one part of biodiversity. We also consider vegetation, amphibians, crayfish, fish as part of biodiversity. And the third component is people, because we are all together on the same boat, and anything that can happen to one of these compartments will impact the welfare of the others. So that's the concept of one health, which is health for ecosystem, health for biodiversity, and health for people.
Why is the MSR and to MSR project, in what way is it connected to the problem of biodiversity? Why is it so important? Why, and why should it be so important?
We are presently facing a major crisis, which is the sixth crisis of biodiversity, which means that in only one century there has been a huge decrease in species on the planet, mainly due to human activity.
Mm-hmm. In what way biodiversity is really important to people, or why should it be important to people? Because, you know, we humans, I can be talking about humans as I am one of them, we humans tend to try to control the nature, right? And the major issue from this point of view is, okay, why bother about biodiversity? Why should we have more species than less number of species, right? So what is the issue there? What is the problem that we are all facing in terms of biodiversity? Maybe this is something that we are not still aware of. What is the nature of this problem? I don't know.
That's a tricky question, and there are a lot of answers at different levels. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In natural ecosystem, every species has its own function. You can produce organic matter, you can be a plant, you can be a grazer eating that plant and being yourself the prey of a larger predator. And that's how it works just for the food web, for example. There are even more important species that we actually don't see that are filtering water, cleaning water, and making all the ecosystem kind of balanced, as long as there is no major impacts, as the ones that people are doing or societies are doing. These impacts can be simply over-exploitation of resources, natural resources, that can be pollution, that can be climate change, that can be biological invasion, so introducing exotic species that overcompete the native species. When we go back to the European pond turtle, the function of the turtle in the ecosystem is not dramatic. It's eating almost everything, so it's not a key species for that. It's not building any architecture like a beaver could do. But from a conservation point of view, the habitat of this species is very important for a lot of other species.
Yes, that's what I was asking. Yeah. In what way it can be really important also to humans, right?
And here we go. So for the MSR project, we use the European pond turtle as an umbrella species, which is an ecological term and conservation term to define a species that for which if any conservation action in favor of this species would be also an advantage for all the species that are living around it. In other terms, if we want to protect or to reintroduce the European pond turtle, we have to create wetlands or we have to restore wetlands. And we have proof of evidence now that by restoring some small ponds or larger ponds, we are actually improving the quantity and the diversity of other species like amphibians, like insects, being they aquatic or terrestrial. Now, when it comes to people, there are two major points. The first one is that by restoring these wetlands or simply by letting these wetlands operating by themselves as natural ecosystems, we actually let nature operate by itself or in a balanced way. And because wetlands produce water, filter water, provide water to people that we can use, but also wetlands are a major carbon pump to contribute to the reduction of climate change due to human pollution. And also wetlands provide massive biomass that we can eat, like fish, for example. Maybe not in our countries, but in more tropical countries, they actually are major issues. Well, wetlands are really key ecosystems for societies. Mm-hmm. Societies in plural, maybe not European society or societies, but on the global scale, that's a major, major habitat.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's fascinating. So to what extent you think that people in Europe, because I think that I know that the project is a European one, to what extent you think people in Europe can actually restore what we call natural habitats or habitats as such? Can we, or should we even influence the nature? And if so, in what way should we do it? Shouldn't we just go a step back and say, okay, let's leave nature work on its own? Or should we just do these things that you are also working on in order to help nature? I know it's another tricky question.
No, that's an interesting question. People are part of the ecosystem.
All right.
So as any other species, we are impacting the ecosystem. The difference between human species and other animal species is that our impact is massive and unsustainable. And that we know we are facing climate change, local scale, regional scale, global scale. We are facing biodiversity crisis, I mean decrease in resources or unbalanced resources. So there is no way to not impact on the ecosystem. Even if we leave a place, we still have some indirect impacts on this ecosystem. So that means there is no way, from my point of view, to not interfere with any ecosystem, even the deepest sea areas. We can't.
It's fascinating what you're saying, because it's so, people seem to be so unaware that we humans are part of the ecosystem. And we tend to see ourselves as someone who is outside of the system that we are only trying to either exploit or sustain, but we are not part of it. Yes. Only to some extent we think that we are part of this ecosystem. So whatever happens to this ecosystem happens to us, right? So it's a very, very interesting point that you're making. And do you think that it is possible to take advantage of it? Do you think that people will actually understand it after the MSR project?
Well, with the MSR project, we are tackling a very specific question. And again, that's a challenge because we are using two different items of the ecosystem. We are investigating wetlands that people in general don't perceive very well, and the turtle that I mentioned people say they love, even if they don't know. So that's more their perception. So if there is a key to make people change their way to envisage how they interact with the environment, it could be about working on their own perception first of the surrounding environment, but most importantly on the impact of their own behavior or action on the environment. And what we would like to do through workshops and seminars to public at large in our study areas, which are in Germany, France, Latvia, and Poland, is to share knowledge and concepts that people at large can have just by the way they are using their landscape, and also the academic knowledge, so the one you have, the one I have, just to find a common playground where at least a few people, and a few one would be good already, where a few people could test some ways to behave more in a more sustainable way or with less impact. And on a longer term, well, I have this view that even if it's a single drop in the ocean, where the ocean is made of multiple of drops, and by chance, just a few small local initiatives may spread broader.
And what do you think is the challenge when it comes to this communication issue? Because you are working in the field of biology, yes, and ecology, and there are also in the project people who are working within sociology. So these are different angles from which these issues can be tackled. So what do you think is the biggest challenge there? What do you think is the challenge when it comes to communication? In what way this knowledge, this academic knowledge, discipline knowledge, could or should be communicated to the society so that the impact is actually achieved, right?
Well, there is a very first challenge, which is making academic people of different discipline having the same language. And that's, we know, that's a big issue, and that might take longer than our three-year project. Mm-hmm. But I'm quite confident that we will find a way, an achievement of that. Then the second question is actually, how do we proceed to go from academic knowledge to either public awareness, and if we want to go even further, to decision-making. And decision-making, I mean, going from academic knowledge to decision-making, that needs engagement by academic people in the question we want to tackle. And in this very project that's about considering nature at large as worth being considered as it is, and eventually being, if not protected, at least used in a sustainable way. And sustainability for me only depends on respect.
Respect of
what you want to eventually use in a sustainable way.
So okay. Mm-hmm.
Respect the natural resources, meaning do not over exploit, just take what you need, not more. Use the most appropriate, and if we're talking about exploiting fish resources, for example, exploit the fully grown individuals and let the smaller one grow instead of fishing them and throw them away. That these kind of engagement that are needed, and respect that is needed as well. And we are all facing a major issue when it comes to transfer academic knowledge to decision makers. That's for sure. And we, within the EMISER project, we will try to do so by, at the end of the project, providing guidelines of the most appropriate way to manage or to restore wetlands for the sake of biodiversity at large, so not only the European pond turtle, but the amphibians, the fish, and also the plants that are part of these natural ecosystems.
Have you ever talked to a politician? I mean, you probably did, but the question is, do you think that about these issues, do you think that politicians will be more respectful than the average human being, that, you know, should be more concerned about these issues?
Well, decision making doesn't only depend on politics.
All right.
You first decide what you do and how you behave. If we go to politics, well, I have the chance for 10 years, since 10 years, I'm working with land managers of the study area in France. And these guys are part of the local council. So these, I mean, we are quite good in France having multiple layers in the administration. So the people to who I talk are highly receptive and concerned about, sustainable management of habitats and natural resources. And they are struggling in convincing their hierarchy to change their mind, because still now, nature, biodiversity doesn't seem to be a crucial issue for people.
Yeah, this is the very problem that I was trying to reflect on also here with you, because it is not a major problem. So what makes a problem a major one? This is something very important. It's also for the sake of the project, but generally, you barely know when it is important or significant enough just to make a decision, right? So my major question to you is, can you see any indices that would show that there is actually a problem? You have mentioned the fact that there is a sixth wave of biodiversity loss, right? So what should happen now to make the decision makers see that there is a major problem there?
Well, we are on the wave already. I mean, we are in the wave, mm-hmm. in the breaking wave that we know. We know that insects are collapsing. We know that insects in a natural ecosystem are the pollinators of all plants that make fruits that we eat.
Yeah.
That we know.
Mm-hmm.
We know that birds are collapsing, especially on the cornfields in all Europe. So we are losing insects that are making flowers turning in edible fruits or vegetables. We are losing birds that are not only eating insects or grains of the flowers that become a fruit. And the major issue is that the larger animals are not the most important in the ecosystem. The tiny, tiny one that nobody talks about, which is bacteria, for example, or very small insects that are operating in the soil. These ones are the proper architects of these ecosystems. So it's obvious. I mean, there are tons of papers, of publications now showing that there is a collapse, not only in biodiversity, but also in the economic services that ecosystems provide. And in France, at least, we are now, our politicians are inundated with the questions of biodiversity and sustainable economy. So that means that at least the politicians that are actually in power, that's too late for them. And so we might lose one or two generations of politicians. But because the question is really a long-term issue, again, what's the proof that we provide and to which we contribute, but we are not the only one, that helps to build this education of the future decision makers.
Mm-hmm.
And the proofs that we show, in our project we don't show the proof because we're actually restoring, but what we show is that we tackle the question the other way. We don't say, look, we destroy and see what happens. We do the opposite. Look, we restore and see what happens. And then more species come back. and then ponds become clearer, water becomes in a safer status. But it's not that simple neither. I mean, recreating a healthy ecosystem also brings other species that were not expected to come. And because we are facing part of the global change, we are facing massive biological invasions, which is the entrance of exotic species that can overcompete the local species. It's a very, very highly tricky balance that we have to cope with. And there is no way to come back to the historical ecosystems. That doesn't work because an ecosystem is always changing. It's always evolving. I think that in most cases, as you mentioned before, the less we do, the better. But we also have to reconsider our perception of nature or biodiversity as it is. And we actually have to accept the fact that what we knew when we were kids won't be there in 10 years, in 50 years, or in one century. New species will come. Some of them will settle. Some will vanish. Maybe the native ones. The new ones will arrive and find a new balance. And I think that's the most important. So first, we have to respect these invasive species somehow, still preventing them to arrive if we can, which is preventing any uncontrolled release of any highly disturbing species. But really have to envisage that tomorrow will be different compared to yesterday. And again, that this connection or this acceptance of the others that only can help people to first conceive how they can live with them and also conceive how they can exploit them if ever they have to, because in our global system, that's mainly about exploitation anyway, for money. Another way could be, instead of having money for a currency, that could be health or well-being, and then the paradigm would be totally different. Mm-hmm. You don't need, if we make this change of paradigm, we should make some interviews in town and ask people if they would prefer totally modern, high-tuned, concrete place or a green area with some trees where they can find shade, where they can find biodiversities, birds hidden in the branches, and some water where they can refresh themselves. And that's really a key question for the next decade, because in town, the best strategy would be to make cities greener, but in the proper way, with more trees, less concrete, and just to make people closer from nature, but also enjoy all the benefits of having nature, especially in the context of global warming. We will need shade, we will need water, and that we can't have in the most modern cities that are mainly made of concrete.
I think it's a brilliant summary of our talk. I mean, that you have just pointed to the very key problems that people might have with accepting the fact that there is the diversity in the world, that we need to respect this diversity, and we need to accept the fact that tomorrow will be different than today. And so we need to adapt. And in order to adapt, we need to accept that this is not the best solution at the moment, whatever we are doing. So this approach is really a change in the mindset, isn't it, for many people. So thank you very much for this. It was very interesting for me to listen to you. And thank you also all our listeners. This was a podcast with Jean-Yves Georges, project coordinator of the MSR project. Thank you very much, Jean-Yves.
Thank you. Dzięki.
Dziękuję. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening to Civitas On Air. We cover current and important political and social topics. Our work is produced by researchers and students from Collegium Civitas, together with Radio Palace. Please subscribe to our podcast by visiting your favourite streaming service, like Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And do stay tuned for the next episode.